Radio 3.8. It is Little Brown Jug Week, and I have dire news. Greg Dooley has stolen the Little Brown Jug and brought it to our podcast. This is a terrible idea.
I brought this thing to work.
Yeah.
It's obviously the replica.
Oh, it's a replica.
Yes. And I did have a few. Is that the real one?
Yeah.
And I'm like, there'd be guys with white gloves and AKs, okay, outside my office right now, all right?
Yeah.
John Falk would be blasting through the door right now.
He would.
So that is Greg Dooley. It is a Little Brown Jug Week. So, of course, Greg Dooley is making the rounds because this is your favorite object in the entire world.
Oh, my God. I milked this week. I've milked this research I've done on the Little Brown Jug. It's been almost 10 years. But it's awesome. The whole reason I do anything about history, it's obviously not to make money. It's to share this information, these great stories that obviously I love. I know you guys love it. And, yeah, it's fun. I'm actually going to speak at Word Manual's reception here in a few minutes, and I'm thrilled, really.
Oh, he just big-timed us.
Yeah.
There'll be some ballers and shot callers there, they said.
Come on, man. He's like, how long is this segment going to be? And I was like, 15 minutes or whatever. He's like, well, yeah, I got it.
Is it cool if I skip the rest of the podcast and go with him? Like, that'd be kind of cool.
Like, normally it would be like, yeah, it's 40 minutes, but he's got to go, like, talk to the Pope.
Well, here's the deal, though, with that kind of stuff, right? They call me under two conditions, and it's an and/or. John Bacon's not available, or there's no budget.
Right,
you get Dooley.
Well, yeah.
He's your man.
I feel that. So let's talk about the jug. It's in its 114th year
since the 1903 game.
Yes,
got it.
Bam,
bing.
Brian Cook, Michigan historian.
Right on.
Yeah. So it's always nice to hear the origin story of the jug. So like, hit us with it.
Sure. So the classic story goes that 1903 Michigan plays a huge game. It's the game of the century in Minneapolis. They travel there, and before the game, they need to have water back then, of course, just like they do today. And they send the equipment manager out to buy a jug, and they actually made beautiful jugs right outside Minnesota, in Red Wing, Minnesota. They're collector's items today. And they played the game. Michigan left. Minnesota found the jug, not captured, not stolen, but they found the jug actually in the locker room in the armory, which is still there today in Minneapolis. And they found it, and the equipment manager found it for Minnesota, and he brought it to their athletic director, a guy named L.J. Cook. And he said, in his thick Scandinavian accent, Yost left his jug. And from there, the legend goes that Yost found out about it and asked for it back, but he was told abruptly and promptly in 1900-something,
you'd have to win it back.
You'd have to win it back. That's the legend of the jug.
But that's not true.
That is not totally true.
Okay.
So the actual story is a little more tame and realistic in the fact that, yeah, Michigan had a jug. It was 30 cents. Tickets to games back then were $2 to $3, okay? They left the jug there. They took a train back. It's pretty heavy. They didn't want to bring it back. They didn't care. They left the jug there.
It's the Gatorade jug for the game.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. Now, what Minnesota did was, because this was such a big game.
Somebody should play for a Gatorade jug. Anyway.
It's about like a Gatorade jug. Yeah, so they took it as a souvenir from this big game that they tied the mighty Yost, who since his time at Michigan in 1901 had not lost a single game. This is, Willie Heston's on this team. They're incredibly dominant. They were undefeated up to that point in the season, and they tied. So they painted on it Michigan jug, and it said captured by Oscar, who's the guy who found it. And on the back, they painted six six, a big six for Minnesota and a tiny little six for Michigan. Ha ha. Like, you know, we really won.
Your points aren't worth as much as our points.
Right. And what happened was Doc Cook hung it in his office. It's actually a really cool photo that I have. And I love showing these guys because most people have never seen it. And it's hanging up in about that high on the ceiling as we're here in the Bow Store. And so what happened was before the 1909 game was the next time they played, Michigan left the Big Ten. So they didn't actually play again. Actually, Michigan was out of the Big Ten at the time. There's another story about that. But they managed to schedule a Minnesota for a couple years. And what happened was they had a pep rally. Michigan's coming back. And you know what? Doc Cook's sitting there in his office. He goes, oh, the jug. And he brings it out. He brings it out at a pep rally. Yost and the captain from that season come back, and he says, you know what, it'd be fun if we played for this. And that's when they really played for it the first time in 1909. We've played for it ever since.
Right.
Okay, that's the real story.
And then Yost kind of retcons that, being like, I asked him for it.
Right, well, he's playing along with it, but the funny thing is for a guy who basically never shut up, historically speaking, kept all his letters and everything, he really never said anything about the jug being gone, being mad about it, anything like that. He played along, right. and obviously became a very cool tradition, and obviously, you know, this was the first real continuous rivalry trophy, and as we were joking before the show, there are over 100 of them today, and they are pretty or sometimes really weird. They're shiny. This is ugly, but it's beautiful because of the history.
So at one point, the jug was lost and it was recovered, but it was a fake jug.
This is great. So one of the things I'm going to do tonight is I'm actually going to give my theory on what happened and who stole the jug.
Oh, there's a conspiracy theory to this.
So I'll give it to you in a nutshell, right? So in 1931, the jug is in a trophy case in the administration building on State Street. That is now the ticket office, by the way. Upstairs of it is media relations. Compliance is on the other side of the building, but that's still there. It still says administration. It's stolen. No one knows what happened. Before the game, I kid you not, a Cadillac with four guys in it wearing dark goggles shows up to a gas station on the east side of town. That gas station is the split-level Bear Claw Coffee today. It's where a stadium and Washtenaw join each other. And
right.
You guys have probably passed it 100 times. And they drive up and they roll out a jug, and this gas station attendant picks it up. No kidding. And you know, I have photos of it and the whole
like
thing.
Like guys with sunglasses.
Goggles. They said goggles. Dark goggles.
Dark
okay?
goggles.
In a Cadillac. Okay.
So they look like a cross between Michael Phelps and Mr. Smith.
Right. Yeah, you got it. So there's the jug, and so
they don't say anything. They're not like, we had your jug.
There's no not. They drove off.
This is some fraternity crap right here. Like, right?
Hang on.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm with you on that. So they drop it off, and they show. Of course, they the media is there pretty quickly. It's kind of odd. So anyway, they show it to Yost, and Yost goes, "Oh yeah, that's the real jug. That's the real jug." And there's other stories about the search. They're looking in cider mills because that's where jugs are, right? So they actually, so they say, this is the jug, and they play that year. Michigan wins. Then they go back to Minneapolis the next year in 32, and Yost goes, and of course he's peppered. Like, come on,
right,
man.
Yeah.
And when they got the jug, the people who had seen it before were like, I don't think so, man. And some stories said it actually had fresh paint on it, which
right.
is weird. And then in 33, another jug shows up on campus. And it's found by a groundskeeper, okay, near the old medical building. And I don't know exactly where that is. I think it's on East University or where it was. And then they go, well, this is a different jug. And they go, okay, that's the real jug. Yo says, that's the real jug. Minnesota wins it in 1934, what I argue is the worst season in Michigan football history.
Okay.
It was Gerald Ford's senior year. It was the whole Willis Ward disaster happened that year. The only game they won, it was a mess. Anyway,
now, a lot of people on the internet would be arguing that this year is the worst year in Michigan football history.
We've had a few of these conversations a few times, haven't we? So, anyway, so the jug is back. Everyone says it's real. Minnesota, Oscar Munson gets it back and says it's real. So, fantastic. So, what happened? No,
right.
Brian's a smart guy. So it's the Great Depression. There's four guys in goggles who are hiding who they are. So they're probably local. It's a prank. They've got a Cadillac. These are rich boys, and they are frat boys. They are local. They have time on their hands. It's students. Most likely.
So they made it, but they created a fake jug.
They did, because either they felt bad about stealing it, or they wanted to continue this ruse and have the real one wherever they were playing, or insert, you know, other guys around town in a, you know, at school.
You can't, like, fence a rivalry trophy.
What's that?
You can't fence a rivalry trophy. Like.
So my theory is that's what happened. And then the other thing that could have happened is it was an inside job by the athletic department who didn't want to – the game hadn't been played yet – who didn't want to face the stigma of not having the jug for the game. So they produced a fake. But either way, I think it was stolen by pranksters in the first place.
Right.
Okay. In 1933, my guess is either someone ratted out who stole it, or they fessed up, or they graduated, and the guys were like, dude, this is getting old, right?
What are we going to do with this?
Yeah, it's only been a few decades since they started playing for it. It was kind of cool at the time, but maybe we should give it back.
Or they filled it up with grain alcohol, got really drunk, and lost it.
So I think someone actually went to the athletic department and said, dude, we got it. And Yost didn't want to be embarrassed because they didn't have it the last 2 years.
Right.
So the guy who picked it up was the brother of the groundskeeper at Ferry Field. Okay, and then they didn't play at Ferry Field at this time, but Ferry Field was still the track and everything. So someone from the related to the athletic department found it. I think they set it up, and
right, there was like an exchange.
Yeah, yes, and when they
maybe some ransom,
maybe. So anyway, it seems, and Yo said, okay, that's the real jug. Munson said that's the real jug. Is it? That's a different question, but that's the story, and that's my theory on what happened.
And we've had some forensics on this since then, right? Like pictures of the old jug. And
we have. So I'll give it to you in a nutshell. But I actually had the Master Potter at the Henry Ford Museum. Okay? This is how much I care about this stuff. Okay? I know it's weird. good thing I was already married at the time.
Henry Ford, do you have a Master Potter? I need to talk.
Right, yeah. Like, I don't even know. Like, if I needed a Master Potter, I'd be like,
well, you know,
I'm in deep trouble right now.
Well, you know what's funny? I'll tell you who hooked me up. Craig Ross, your buddy.
Yeah,
he goes, you know, you know who you need to talk to. He goes, I know the professor, the art professor at Michigan.
That is the most Craig Ross.
And they will tell you who to talk to. And they said, oh, he lives in Ann Arbor. He works at the Henry Ford Museum. He makes pottery from that era. I went down there. I showed him all the photos. He pointed out things. It's one of those things where an expert looks at something and sees things you cannot. And he found all kinds of things. Now, the one thing I can tell you is that on the current jug today, under the Minnesota M, it has two M's on either side, you can see an old-styled M, and there are photos that date that back to the 20s. And there has been a story that's been broken before from the 20s in 1924, but I've never seen another story. All the living equipment manners that I've spoken to, and their lineage goes back to 1919 for Henry Hatch, a famous guy, have said it's never been broken. All right, there's been other stories.
I feel like you got out like a tome from the Citadel and dusted it off.
I'm giving you guys the nutshell, man. It's pretty crazy. I mean, we're talking pitch of handle. So I did a photo overlay, and you can play around with photos. We all know that.
Yeah.
But I did a photo overlay, and it is compelling. It's a compelling piece of evidence. And I'll tell you, the Master Potter guy, based on what he knows, he thinks it is the original jug.
Okay.
I always like to say I think it dates at least to the 20s, which gives it a good shot to be the real one.
So at what point does the jug get retired, or do they just repaint it until like the you have like these microfilm scores on it?
Well, so
I'm very visual podcast right now. He's pulling out the jug.
Yeah.
I mean, there's only like
I'll
two more spots left.
I'm sitting in my chair. I'm holding a jug. Okay. So they've got a spot above the big M right here.
Right.
And that was new in 2013. Yeah, Joe Gordon painted that on. So what they're going to do, I assume, is you're going to use the space down here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're going to use the space up here, and then two more down here. And now we don't play every year.
That only buys you like, what, 20 games, 18 games?
But Brian, we're not going to play again until 2020. I'm not sure if we're scheduled again to play after that. And then if we do expand, who knows? So I think this will last a long time.
They're just going to repaint it smaller. The numbers are plenty big enough. You know?
Well, I've heard a lot of people say, get a new jug. And I'm like, are you crazy? Don't even talk to me.
You will fight people.
I will. It's madness.
Someone suggests, like, we want to see this. Come on. You suggested you get a new jug. Come on. No, don't do it. He's going to fight you.
Please, you want to take a look?
No.
All right, man.
That was a wise decision.
Yeah. All right.
Well, so, we won't hold you up because you got to go hang out with the big shots and the Pope and the athletic director And like the
I'm giving a knowing nod, kind of squinting
right
now.
The vice pope. Is there a vice pope?
Yes.
Right.
You don't know. You're Jewish.
Yeah. Now I know.
We invented this stuff, man.
I think it's Mark Coyle, the athletic director from Minnesota, was invited. So it would be really cool for me, honestly, to meet both, you know, to be with those guys and give this presentation, because as I just mentioned, the athletic director from Minnesota, to me, actually is the guy who really sparked this whole thing. And to see his, you know, his legacy down the road would be kind of cool.
Well, don't fanboy around him, man.
Hey, man.
The only fanboy guy who's like, oh, the Minnesota athletic director is the coolest person in the world to meet.
No, not in this crowd, man. I got to play it cool.
Really?
I got to play it cool. I do want to give a shout out to all the lurkers out there on MGO blog, all the guys who listen and don't comment and just lurk.
Yeah, we appreciate you.
Nope. Yeah.
I try.
My buddy Matt's a big lurker.
I try to keep in mind that like 90% of the people don't comment, and that the human race is good.
Right. Well, you guys are money. Oh, dude, I read on one of the Usenet threads a rumor of a possible book coming out. Maybe.
Yeah.
Well, is that enough?
Yeah. We're going to get it done.
We're this close to threads. I got the cover.
We don't know if it's going to be for Christmas. So that's the holdup. But there's going to be like a Dooley/Craig Ross book. Basically, it's all your stuff.
Awesome.
Yeah.
We'll pay you for it.
I'm still waiting to get paid for my article from this year, so I won't hold my breath.
Wait, no, I did. I paid.
You paid him. Didn't you
I
pay?
Think I paid you.
I thought, was it cash or?
No.
Okay. All right.
Who do I work in cash? Am I a drug dealer? What is going on?
That was totally a joke. No, no, but I think that's a sweet idea.
The 2014 edition. Or no, with the back in the day, we all slipped.
The Maple Street.
Yeah.
I should have said their name because they don't exist anymore. So, yeah, they can't sue anybody. Also, they owe me money. But anyway.
What's the deal with the big news? The Scout and 24/7 merging and all that?
Yeah, well, that's the big news.
All right, man. Well, I think Sam might be there. I'll have to get the scoop from him.
Yeah, well, I mean, they got bought, and now they're going to be one, like, super site.
They still can't keep up with you, can they?
Well, we do different things.
Okay.
Yeah, so they're going to be, like, the gold standard for recruiting news and insider information.
Huh.
And we'll have the best cat memes, so.
No one's replacing us there.
Yeah, I mean, no one's coming. I mean, come on. That's our niche.
Excellent.
Or niche. You got to get out of here, man.
All right, fellas, again, keep it real. I might see you later.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. All right.
Why?
I don't know. Didn't you say something?
Yeah,
hanging out.
I'm gonna go to the hockey game, so you won't see me later.
All right.
I apologize.
Cool.
I have a previous engagement.
All right. Anytime. It's awesome to be here, especially this week. So thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, it's anytime, man.
Cheers.
You are the authority on Michigan history.
All right.
That was Greg Dooley of M Victors.
Thanks, Dave.
Are you gonna take the jug, or can we keep that?
Nope.
Well, that's our well, not, I guess not annual anymore, is it? It's our erratic jug history moment from Greg Dooley, of course, now writing a lot for the actual, like, programs.
Yeah.
We've gone far too long without mentioning our sponsors. We are recorded live before a live retail audience at the Bow Store. Our sponsors are Underground Printing, the Bow Store, the Residence Inn, Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshire Landing, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, and Michigan Law Grad. We're going to take a break, come back, and talk about Rutgers. Don't go away.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go. Let's go.
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
It's painless, it's online. It's group ordering made easy for your next custom printed apparel order. Pogo from Underground Printing takes the aggravation out of custom printing for a group. Whether you're selling shirts for a fundraiser, organizing a large event, or trying to collect sizes and payment for a family reunion, Underground Printing is here to help. Save time and hassle every step of the way with our easy-to-use site. No more guessing what to order, chasing people down to pay, or wasting time trying to sort out who needs what. We'll set it up and you can just sit back and relax. We can even take care of individual shipping. To learn more about Pogo, visit us at any of our convenient locations or at pogo.undergroundshirts.com.
If you've got a cold room or you're feeling drafts in your house, you probably want to take care of that before winter. Here's what you've got to do. Call Ecotelligent Homes for a comprehensive home energy audit. They will find the source of your issue, your licensed teams will install the fixes, they will help you qualify for the right local rebates, and even offer 0% financing. Ecotelligent Homes is an award-winning DTE Energy and Consumers Energy trade ally. Call 248-291-7815 or visit their website at ecotelligenthomes.com.
Hi, this is Seth from MGoBlog. So we bought our home through a local bank. Family friend was the banker, but the underwriter was just it was a nightmare. So we went to refinance. I talked to Matt. It was so different. He shops the loan to different underwriters, so we were a priority for them. And he knows what they needed from us ahead of time, so we didn't have to keep digging through our old paperwork. He's incredibly ethical. He knows the system. He knows where they take advantage. And he keeps a small shop, and he does all the work himself, so he keeps all the costs down. Anyway, that's why I highly recommend Matt. He's licensed in Michigan, Ohio, and Florida. You can give him a call at 734-531-9950. Visit his new office in Ann Arbor on State Street or go to homesurelending.com/mgoblog and he'll take care of you. That's Homesure Lending and MLS number 1161358.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
You bring ginger, I'll bring spice. You bring tumblers, I'll bring ice. You bring Susie, I'll bring Beth. Together we'll bring happiness.
Ha, 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 dee, dee, dee. Little brown jug, how I love thee. Fiddle-dum and fiddle-dee. Little brown jug, oh, you're for me.
Rich men look for added wealth. Sick men look for lasting health. And the common place they look is in a jigger or a hook.
What the heck was that?
Little Brown Jug.
Oh.
It's that, you never Google or YouTube Googled Little Brown Jug and, yeah.
Can't say that I have.
I guess this was like the drinking song of the turn of the century.
Sounds like it. It gets a zero on the rave scale, by the way. A zero.
Wait till you hear the other two.
All right, we should probably talk about the Rutgers game.
I want to talk about Peters.
Okay, shoot. Like, what was your impression?
My impression, well, other than Hosanna's, I thought.
Well, I think Hosanna is a little bit.
I thought that.
Do you guys do that, or is that just a Catholic thing? By the way,
I think that's just a Catholic thing. Okay. We argue about everything we do. You don't want to even. You don't want.
I don't.
Go there.
I'm not gonna touch like the.
Yeah. No. We're
the just gonna talk about facts and not like.
We are the Rutgers of religions, actually.
I don't. Let's just stop this thread immediately. Talk about Brandon Peters. That's a lot safer.
I wanted to compare him against John O'Korn's Purdue game to make sure that I wasn't just seeing things. And
okay.
I thought that
you went back and you watched the O'Korn Purdue.
No, I went back and watched and read your UFR for the Purdue game.
Okay.
And tried to compare like the sense that we got afterwards. And there are similarities. They made things easy for him. On the other hand, there are differences. He was actually hitting some things that I think there was more than two or three reads that they were giving him, especially on the last drive of the first half.
Okay.
Where they opened up the playbook a little bit for him, and he did. He actually saw.
There were only like 14 passes, so you should be able to specify which passes we're talking about here.
Well,
the obsessives in the audience.
I then wrote FIFO film in the last two nights. And
sure.
I haven't slept in a couple of days, so.
Well, I mean, my impression of him is he felt like a guy who was being spoon-fed a little bit, but he did as well as you could expect in that circumstance. I like to focus on the errors to see the nature of the errors. And, of course, the near pick six was real bad. But that's not necessarily a bad read. It's just a late read. And you kind of saw that on a couple of his other accurate passes where, you know, there's that throw out to Perry in the flat, which is just stealing. And it's like, okay, is he waiting because he should wait, or is he waiting because he doesn't quite have the confidence to throw it yet? And I think maybe that's one of the reasons that we've seen him on the bench. But the other things that went wrong, like he barely overthrows Wheatley. Wheatley's open. That'll happen.
Yeah.
Wheatley, like if that's Gentry, that's probably a completion.
And it got his hands. I mean, it's a marginal
throw. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then He decides he's going to go to Peoples Jones on a fade. That goes out of bounds. He did have Gentry breaking open on a more open route. That throw isn't the best decision. It's not the worst decision either. And if it was like a dead-on throw, I mean, Peoples Jones has a shot at it and can make that catch. And then, of course, the incompletion right at the end where he's got a sure touchdown and he just leaves it way short. That was like the whole stadium went, oh. But as errors go for a redshirt freshman quarterback in his first playing time, you know, that is as far from a disastrous a performance.
I mean, what we knew up until that point was spring game, which was a very small piece of the playbook.
Yeah.
And then
I don't think there's a whole lot more.
And our recruiting film, and then he was behind John O'Korn, and we knew what John O'Korn was. So, I mean, we were imagining disasters because he was behind O'Korn.
A lot of people were, but you know, I spent the column, like half of it, like talking about all the other situations where you see people stick with old quarterbacks too long and not go to the new quarterback because, you know, there's an amount of information that you have. You made your decision, and then, you know, the sunk cost fallacy kind of comes into effect, right?
Right.
So it's very difficult for the new data to overwhelm your previous impression. I thought Michigan took too long to make that move. I would have at least looked at him in the Indiana game. But that's also so typical, not just of football coaches, but like of all human behavior.
Yeah. I mean, going into the Indiana game, I was not calling for Peters to have to start. I was saying I thought O'Korn should have a short leash in that game because by then he has already shown that he was not. But when he missed the Gentry throw, the two-man read that always sticks with us, that was the moment that they could have inserted Peters because they were ahead by 10. He was probably the better option at that point as far as winning the game.
Yeah.
He was a more important option. He was better for them. And you had to do it before Penn State. You can't throw him into the middle of Penn State.
Well, I mean,
once they got to that point, it's just, I know it's a sunk cost fallacy, but there's that, and there's also throwing a redshirt freshman who even the practice observers who like him are saying,
I'm mostly defending what happened with Peters. I'm not outraged he wasn't on the field earlier, but
he's not the difference in that game anyway.
I think that there are errors that are impossible to avoid, and everybody's like, okay, this was a bad thing, and now there must be accountability for a thing. And I'm like, sometimes that accountability is just like, sorry. Like I wish we hadn't done that either.
Are there people in the country more accountable than head coaches of football teams?
Well, I mean, does Charlie Weiss count?
Not anymore. Even Charlie Weiss got to keep his job only X amount of years. Like, people in higher positions than that get to keep their jobs until they retire and they're incompetent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Non-Brandon Peters items on the offense mostly center on the fact that Rutgers got absolutely paved in a way that I don't think a Michigan team has done since I've been paying close attention. There have been explosive games, a lot of long runs with Denard Robinson, but the sheer down-to-down, like, physical destruction of the opposition defense, I haven't seen anything like that. And that was it really felt like, hopefully, the first in a series of just Harbaugh mashings where you come up against Michigan and you know you're going to get 300 yards rushing put on you.
I mean, this is a step. This is a step in the process of getting this offensive line to the point where they can maul people on their base play power, which was a play that works perfectly against Rutgers because their edges are weak.
Yeah.
Their strongest point is the defensive tackles, and that kind of just pins them inside and leaves them there. And their linebackers are not quick to read things. So it was a good but they didn't just run power. I thought they were using it as part of the play, and then you pointed out something in the UFR I thought was really interesting, those backside cuts were actually planned.
Probably. You in your neck sharpness, you pointed out some holes that were there on the backside kind of early in the game.
I think it was a mix because I think when I went back over after you said it, I went back over some of the clips that I had, and in the fourth quarter, what they were doing is turning with the center was almost letting that defensive tackle get inside of him and then turning him.
We're agreeing. But I mean you were talking about like so there are holes in the first half, and I think that's not the play call.
Right.
And then in the second half, they're aware that Rutgers is leaving those cutbacks open. So they tweak it a little bit to make sure that the running back knows that that's a likely outcome. and that the offensive line is blocking to make that happen. And someone in the comments of the UFR brought up that video of Harbaugh from the Virginia Tech Rose Bowl when he was at Stanford, mm-hmm. where he's like yelling at one of his guys, like, don't forget the back door, don't forget the back door.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, is it a play call or is it just like an adjustment that Michigan is making based on what they're seeing on the field? Maybe some of both, but it like these things are really, really subtle. So like I looked at those plays like 20 times. I'm like, is this on purpose? And the sheer frequency with what Michigan was doing with it in the fourth quarter made me think that it actually was.
Yeah, I mean they're absolutely looking for it. The running backs are looking at that first after a certain point. I thought the big tweak was actually having the center let that defensive tackle, because they were trying to they were slanting towards the play to make up for the fact that they get pinned, and the tweak was basically just to zone them and run backside. And I think that's a tweak that you can use in the base play, because the center knows if they jump inside of him, the center can say, okay, my job is just turn him. If he doesn't, it's basically a zone play with power.
This might be a little bit too detailed for a not visual podcast, but I mean, I think the point is that Michigan went and they ran a ton of gap schemes in this. Anything that wasn't an edge run was a gap play, and they mashed Rutgers with it, which is a turnaround from early in the year when they were running a lot of inside zone and not doing it very well. In addition to the gap versus zone distinction, Michigan is diversifying what they do in terms of just the number of different looks they're giving you. So they have that split flow counter. They have something that looks like a counter to that. They have the regular power plays. And I think you're going to start seeing those like traps and the wham stuff that, you know, a lot of the smart guys on the internet talk about, like James Light. Like, I think they're getting to the point where you're going to see that introduced, and it's going to feel more like, you know, the first couple years where, you know, they're playing Maryland and they come out and it's like, oh, we're going to run the T formation now. So, you know, it feels like a very Harbaugh rush offense after a kind of a misstep early in the year.
And it's the big question is it sustainable? And I love this graph that Mathlete gave us. Again, going back to the visual podcast, sorry, but it goes up.
Yeah.
And it's been doing that the entire season pretty much. So this is a... And they were actually moving guys off the ball against Penn State. I wonder. I think Onwenu was actually a big part of that. And I don't know what his injury status is after last game, but
yeah. Well, so I mean, the thing is that, I mean, this has been coming. So you can see it in the average line yards over the last month. You can see it over the number, like the percentage of runs they gained 3 yards, and you can see it in the UFR charting. Mm-hmm. Where I'm grading the blocks and, like, you know, they get 68% against Michigan State and their run game sucks. They get 68% against Penn State and their run game sucks. They play Rutgers, and Rutgers is not anywhere near as aggressive as those two teams with their safeties.
Right.
So, and they just don't have the confidence that they're going to be able to get away with it. That's not how they play. So we got kind of a glimpse at what Michigan's run game would have looked like against Penn State and Michigan State if they had any ability to back off safeties.
And that comes back to Peters, whether they can actually throw the ball over their heads, because they were not afraid of a corn. Unfortunately, they were not really afraid of Spate by the time he went out.
Yeah, so I think early in the year we were all grumbling about Tim Drevno. The recovery that Michigan's offensive line has done here on the ground is astounding and very encouraging. And then the pass protection has sucked, but I don't know how it was not going to do that.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, when we don't want to have the sunk cost fallacy about, like, our opinions about what's going on this year, this is major progress and it should be acknowledged as such. I don't have anything to say about the defense. It was
Rutgers.
I mean, this is what was going to happen, right? Like, yeah. So they managed to get Bush going the wrong way on their big play. They had a couple of great catches on their like legitimate touchdown drive. They RPS'd a little bit. They scored 14 points because all of their 200 yards were on two drives. So this just felt
one of them, Rashinho just making inch perfect throws, which are not at all part of his normal MO.
Right, and like that happens, and I think we forget about that because the Big Ten is often so bad that. Especially with quarterbacks this year, that sometimes you just get got.
Someone asked me if Cannell should have a signed circle, our trouble spot,
no.
on the defense. I was like, no. And he's like, well, a couple games in a row now, he's given up. I'm like, that. You could have Charles Woodson on that coverage and probably would have given up that catch.
I mean, there have been some hiccups, but I don't think anything near that.
He had a bad game against Penn State, but so did everybody.
I mean, a lot of people did. They did a great job in that game. The amount of takeaway you can get from a Rutgers game is generally minimal. And so I think we are going to move on and take a break, come back with a gimmicky top five.
Hooray.
I grew up in a small town of Hazlitt, Michigan, and I witnessed a lot of great people making a lot of poor financial decisions. And I thought to myself, I don't want to be in that position. I don't want to have my retirement at risk. Over the last 17 years, my team has developed and refined our process, which helps people understand what's important to them and what they value most. And because people don't have pensions anymore, we're adding in multiple income streams during retirement. At Peak Wealth Management, our goal is to build long-lasting relationships, and we do that by building trust, by showing our integrity, and letting them know how much we care. And that's one of the most important things we do here at Peak, is understand your goals and help you get there.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor. From San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
If you need a place to stay in Ann Arbor and don't want to be stuck out by I-94, there's a new hotel downtown, and the owners, who should be well known to the Michigan community, have asked our help to get the word out. The Martin family, yes, that Martin family, recently opened the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown, just a block from Main Street and a short walk to Michigan Stadium. They're competitively priced and offer a free hot breakfast, free Wi-Fi, fully equipped kitchen and every suite, and an indoor pool. That's the Residence Inn Ann Arbor downtown.
In southeastern Michigan, the yearly cost for a nursing home averages $90,000. It doesn't have to, though. Reed McCarthy founded Ann Arbor Elder Law after handling a tricky situation for his own family. Years of experience later, his boutique firm works with clients across southeast Michigan dealing with Medicaid planning, long-term care, and tax, disability, and family law, not to mention family dynamics. If you have a family member who may need that level of care, or if you're ready to start your own estate plan, Reed can give you a plan for the future. Visit AnnArborElderLaw.com or call 734-945-9693. That's 734-945-9693.
Want the perfect game day outfit? Underground Printing has unique, great-fitting UM apparel and officially licensed apparel from legendary Michigan names like Woodson, Howard, Schembechler, Ufer, and more. UGP also specializes in custom-printed apparel and promotional items for groups, events, and businesses. Whether you need one shirt as a gift or 1,000 shirts for a charity walk, Underground can customize almost anything for groups large or small. To learn more, visit Underground Printing at one of our three convenient locations around Ann Arbor or online at undergroundshirts.com.
What is going on with what
raved
is
at that?
What was that? It sounded like the theme song to what, the Honey I Shrunk the Kids or something.
Wait, I think it had a funny name. It was relevant to Rutgers. That's how I Yeah. It, Run Amok. It's called Run Amok.
That has been in like a movie from like 1989 or something.
Yeah. Like Macaulay Culkin running around.
Something, yeah. Well, congratulations.
Before it terrorizes people.
Gimmicky Top 5 time. We are bringing in Richard Hogue of Hogue Law. How you doing, Richard?
I'm doing okay. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm well. So we asked Richard, like, what should we do this week? Because we were out of ideas.
Uh-huh.
And he actually came up with a great one, which is, like, rule changes that would restore the public's faith in the NCAA. Because, of course, the end of the North Carolina decision came down and everybody was like, what's that? Mark Emmert is on, like, a PR campaign to, like, trying to be like, hey, we're useful. We have a purpose.
If he doesn't think people believe in the NCAA, I can't imagine why.
Because they have.
I wonder how many people at his press conference were like, how do we restore the faith in the NCAA? And everyone's like, you.
So, like, but, like, five ways to be like, all right, if you do these things, the NCAA will be cool with me and the rest of the populace. So
yeah.
Let's do it. Seth, you're number five.
Number five is professional refs.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's one thing that the NFL does right, and it's people are always going to complain about the officials, but when I looked at their LinkedIn pages recently just to
please tell me not because you were trying to find their address.
No.
Kentucky fan thing.
I wanted to be able to like make comments like, oh, they're engineers, so I
they're not engineers.
Some of them are.
Oh no.
Yeah.
Those are my people.
Your people are terrible, Brian.
Maybe the good refs are engineers.
Yeah. I won't tell you what O'Neill is. Anyway, they have high pressure jobs and they don't get to they can't travel that far because they have to go home to their families and work on Monday. And because of that, they don't get to review the rules. They don't the rule changes don't really get implemented
right.
Well.
I mean like they should just be locked in a room for the entire off season just like pretending to call games. And I mean, yeah.
I mean, they have enough money.
Yeah, they have so much money.
They have so much money, and a little bit can go towards the product. And part of the product is making sure the play on the field is what matters more than, oh, you know, we've got these guys who just do it on the side. And the season's not that long. These guys can have other jobs, too. It's not going to cost.
Can I call
much.
You Rich, or are you a Richard?
I answer to all variations of Richard. It's my favorite part of the name. Richard, Rick, Ricky. Dick.
All right. Ricky, you're number five.
There you go, Ricky. That's Ricky Vaughn. Send him in. No, I think that's a great point. The rule book, as you probably know, is pretty substantial.
I've looked through it.
And we're talking about a sport, all sports, really, where you're talking about split-second decisions.
Yeah.
And you have to essentially have the rules memorized. As we know with grounding calls, which I could discuss at length, there's too many components to that rule.
Yeah.
It's too much for the referees to contemplate.
Okay, but what's your number five? Is it the same thing?
Oh, you're asking me for my number
five? Number five is what Seth said.
No, see, you got to watch it with the lawyers, okay? So I could just go on and on about...
I was getting that impression.
Yeah, so no, my number five is actually philosophically based around getting rid of gamesmanship and a lot of the stuff that the schools do. And I would like to have eligibility changed from being on a yearly basis to essentially being 6 years to play 52 games. Get rid of medical redshirt trickery. Get rid of contemplating waivers of the NCAA, going to them and asking them for special permission and essentially saying, look, you matriculate, you got 6 years, you play 52 games, you play three this year, you got nine this year over here.
But like you're going to go into a senior year and this guy can play like six games? That's a little weird, isn't it?
Well, it's possible. I think it also bakes in the red shirt issue, right?
Right.
So you can have essentially partial red shirts. My philosophy on a lot of this stuff, we could get – Seth asked me to talk a lot about the Republican tax reform plan when I got on here today. And
is that true?
No. Your sarcasm meter is so off today.
And one of the things that always strikes me about taxes or laws or contracts is this kind of arbitrary yearly whatever.
Yeah.
So we've got a certain amount of income this year. We've got a certain amount of income that year. You make nothing last year. You make $1 million this year. You're suddenly paying for a lot more than just a $500,000 year average, which is good. Admittedly, it's a tough hypothetical. But I feel the same way about eligibility or any other kind of rule set. There should be averaging. There should be medians that make things more fair as they go on. And I think that if you get rid of the Nick Sabans of the world or the Mark D'Antonios or whoever having to petition the NCAA and the NCAA ruling coming out and saying, oh, yes, that's fine, Mark, then at least some of that kind of patina of ill omen goes away.
You are really communicating that you are a good lawyer. I listen to you and I'm like, boy, this guy is a lawyer.
I'll try to get rid of patina for the rest.
No,
of
no,
the,
that's fine.
The broadcast.
This is you're building your brand.
That's that Michigan law education.
You have probity.
There you go.
All right. Speaking of probity, my number five is give Rutgers the death penalty. I don't need a reason.
Okay.
Seth, you're number four.
God. All right, this is your idea. I'm just stealing it from
you.
Okay,
yeah.
Non-binding letters of intent.
Yeah, this is my idea. I didn't even write this down, but yeah, that's a good idea.
I love this idea. For people who have, because we haven't talked about it for years, I don't think. It's,
I'll explain it.
It's your thing.
So you can sign a letter of intent any point before signing day. That means you can have unlimited contact with the school that you sign with. You can have a second official visit. No other coaches can contact you. You're not allowed to take official visits elsewhere. At any time, you can rescind that letter of intent, reopen your recruitment. If you have taken a second official visit to the original school, that counts against you. And then on signing day, you have kind of a formal... And the school commits to signing you when you sign the non-binding letter of intent. And then on signing day, you make it all official. So that locks you in case you don't want to get Swensoned. You know that if you didn't get your non-binding letter of intent, that you're not actually committed. And similarly, as a school, you have a more of an assurance that that guy is actually going to be in your class without locking in anyone into a school before coach firing season.
Yeah.
And the players, I brought this up with my brother's friend who's a coach, who's a high school coach in around Detroit. And what he loved about it most is that schools who already recruited a guy, the kids already committed, especially to lower level schools, or like, you know, he's going to Eastern. No one else is really going to offer him for the rest of the year. And he can't talk to the Eastern coaches except for a certain prescribed amount. And like the coaches will be sending his high school coach tips. You're like, hey, could you have him do this? Or you can have him work on this? Or what's he doing? And there's all these things that people have to do just to have that communication with players who are already in the fold, who are trying to prepare for college, who want to make sure they got the right courses, and you have a very limited amount of communication with these guys, and that's like be a huge thing for the kids themselves.
I like how you have like an idea that I actually had that would improve things, and I was like, fire Rutgers! Rich, you're number four.
I think along the same lines as my initial kind of eligibility discussion, the one thing that I would like to see changed in terms of when coaches leave teams is I'd like to have, just like you saw in the Penn State and some other more special circumstances, the players have the right to essentially a free transfer. Again, kind of gone the philosophy that the more icky aspects of the NCAA, whether or not they're legal or whether or not they're otherwise morally fine, they look bad to the public, and that's as important as anything in terms of establishing that the NCAA is not evil and is your friend.
Right. My number four is full-time refs, so we can just move on. Seth, you're number three.
My number three is I couldn't write it down. Now I'm not saying it correctly.
Okay. Maybe next time write it down.
I was in the middle of writing it down, and then we had other things.
All right, we're going
to
go.
I'll come back to my number three, and I'll give it to you.
Richard, you're number three.
Okay. Rotating presidents. I'd like to see shorter terms or maybe even an annual term.
Okay, so not literally like being basted in an oven.
No. In terms of those kinds of penalties, you save those for after hours.
Okay.
But, no, I think that different people in the role could help to just mitigate that a little bit. And the common complaint about any kind of rotating term limit is that they can't get things done. I don't think that's something to be avoided when we're talking about the NCAA.
Okay. My number three is a max of 2 commercial breaks per quarter. Make it up somewhere else. I was watching the Penn State-Ohio State game, and after a punt, they're turning it over. They're not going to commercial break, and Gus Johnson's like, oh, here's a quick message from Duracell, and they have a Duracell message for 15 seconds. It was awesome. I loved it. I'm going to buy a Duracell battery because you know what? It wasn't a commercial break. Like, get Papa John to be like, hey, there's 2 fewer commercial breaks in this game because of me, and I'll buy his terrible pizza.
See, this is really funny because as the hours creeped past, whatever, 1 in the morning on game 5, the one thought I had was I'm never buying a Duracell battery at all because there have been so many commercials in this game. It is now so late in the evening as I'm trying to watch that the fact that you advertised another product while they're doing a pitching change offended my conscience.
You had the Duracell commercial break. I had the Duracell in-game thing, and we have different opinions of the company because one is doing something nice for me and one is doing something mean to you.
Well, I just think that it works. Your philosophy of reducing those commercials and having more of that in-game stuff, like European soccer, is a great idea. What we wind up getting, like so many things we could talk about in the law or otherwise, is the combination of both, the worst of both worlds. Yeah. We get that Duracell ad, and then we get the Duracell cap, and then we get the Duracell commercial, and then we get the Duracell postgame show. It's a little much.
But the NCAA can easily say, look, we're an athletic organization.
This is more of a conference-level thing, I think, where like, you know, Jim Delaney can be like, all right, we're going to do something for our fans once in our lives.
And come watch Big Ten. I do.
Have number three. Okay.
Yes, unlimited drafting.
What?
So,
that mean?
That you can get drafted and you can still play. You don't have to give up your eligibility to. Who cares about the pro leagues?
And you should be able to sign with an agent.
Yeah,
sign with an agent,
and they can control the agents to a degree, so they can. Yeah. You know, there's pay the players is a whole thing, but very simply, you know. They lose. You're losing players all the time. You're losing your talent all the time to the draft. And a lot of times, guys are not drafted, or they're drafted and play half a year, and you're giving up value for your product to the NFL for nothing. And you just say, look, you can draft them. We'll let them play as long as they. If you're not using them, we're going to use this talent until they run out of their eligibility.
All right. Now it's your turn.
Yeah,
for number two.
Right back in. Number two is ban divisions.
Okay.
This is NCAA. No more divisions. Splitting things up. So, like,
well, how does that work?
You just play. You play each other, okay? And every year you can change schedules. Conferences can do it however they want to, but you can't split them up into divisions and have stupid conference championship games, which are usually in some dead NFL stadium in the first week of December.
With, like, the best team versus the fifth best team in the league.
Yeah. I'm sick of Wisconsin automatically getting an extra game against whoever's the best team in the Big Ten. Like, no more divisions. Let's just if you're in a conference, play each other. And if you have too many teams to play each other every year, you can rotate. And then at the very end, you can have like a conference showcase. If you really need this thing, have like one or two games of like that were the best games that were not played.
These are not really. That's not. I didn't do an NCAA issue, so you're not doing an NCAA issue. I can't criticize you, but I already did, so I can't take it back.
Okay,
Richard, you're number two.
Number two, I would like to see, we talk about players being paid all the time, but I think that in particular, and this is going to be near and dear to your all's heart, I think that they should be able to be paid for social media, YouTube, blogs. We've seen this kind of pop up with people that have a cooking channel that the NCAA says absolutely not.
Right.
And things that even if they're...
The kickoff guy at UCF lost his scholarship. Well, he didn't have a scholarship. He lost his eligibility.
If you want to be a slot receiver at Michigan State and rap... You can be a slot receiver at Michigan State and rap.
And you can monetize that video. More power to you.
Absolutely.
So I really think that...
That guy had talent.
Eventually, NCAA is going to lose that fight about getting people paid. But I think incremental steps can improve their brand.
My number two is academic fraud now counts.
This is a tough one for the lawyer in me. You saw me commenting on this.
Like, if you go on probation with your accreditation... And you had football or basketball players that are part of the reason for that, presumption of guilt. This isn't the U.S. legal system. We don't have to presume people are innocent. We should presume people are guilty except for John Beilein, who is my golden boy.
Until December, and then he comes back around in March.
Well, okay. That's a little on the nose, but yes.
North Carolina, I don't think anybody's got any question that they did wrong and they did bad by a lot
of
folks,
and they
didn't educate people.
And that's like the one thing that the NCAA should be like hardcore about is like you are in college to get a real education.
And this is why you exist. This is why the NCAA exists.
He has an objection. So object.
I don't have an objection. This is one of the things that almost made my list. You're getting a bonus from me, which is that I think the NCAA has to do a better job of getting in front of. Explaining that not every issue in the world is an NCAA issue.
Okay.
We talk about this in the context of Penn State in particular. Absolutely heinous. I can't stand watching Penn State really since all that happened. But the NCAA looks at it and says, their lawyers tell them this, honestly, is what happened. Says, okay, we've looked at our bylaws. We've looked at the ways we penalize people. We look at why this organization was formed. And we're not in the business of policing this activity. and I know it was tangentially related to the football team or any sports team, but the NCAA is not the FBI, is not the police.
We're the
cream
cheese guys.
Exactly. Too much cream cheese, you're out. And so I think the NCAA could do a better job, and I'm not saying it's a pleasant activity, but to get out in front and say, this is a very bad thing. We are totally against it. It's also not NCAA purview. We look forward to seeing how local law enforcement handles it or whoever else the right authority is.
Okay, local law enforcement in that case is a good thing for the Penn State people.
Yeah.
Was it a good thing for the Baylor people? Because they were the local law enforcement was in the pocket of Baylor, basically. So, like, does the NCAA have, like, a purview to be, like, if you are enabling your guys to rape people that we're going to...
So I'm going to give you the lawyer answer here.
Okay.
And this will be familiar to you as kind of maintaining a forum, which is to say, if you dip your toe into policing a little bit of activity, you take on the liability for all the activity. And so I think the NCAA's advice on this has to be very careful, because one, we've already found out over the last decade, they don't have the legal power to go and get the information they need to have these investigations anyway. So try not to claim that you should be policing it, because it's going to be very difficult for you. And if you say you're going to police it and you do a bad job, it looks a lot worse than saying, whoa, outside our canon. And if the list is, how can we make the NCAA look better, it's staying out of situations where you say, we're going to handle this. Oh, you handled that really badly.
I still think the academic fraud thing is, like, so bad, because they maintain eligibility standards.
Absolutely.
And if you're fraudulently keeping people eligible, I feel that should be within the purview of the NCAA. And if you yourself are saying that these classes are fraudulent and then you change your tune later because you might get busted, like, I mean, the loopholes that the UNC was able to walk through
that it applies
enormous.
To everybody. I mean, that's the letter comes out and says it applies to all the students, and so it's not an NCAA violation because you defrauded your entire student body.
Right, and like I think if you're defrauding the athletic department and defrauding the education of the student, just because you're also defrauding some other people shouldn't get you off the hook for that part.
Right. No, and I think morally and emotionally and everything else, you're exactly right. I think as an institution, they just need to watch it.
Seth, you're number one.
It goes right back to all the stuff we're still talking about. I want the Power Five to separate, create their own NCAA, or at least create their own division and lock people out. The reason why they don't have a lot of these things that we're talking about, why academic standards, they set up this whole system as schools could police themselves, because back then when they wrote these rules, school presidents hated their football teams. James Angel, when you walk into Angel Hall, look up that and give him a finger, because he was trying to shut Yost down his entire career. So those they wrote the rule saying, okay, the presidents can handle this, because if the football team starts doing anything with their students, those are the guys who are going to be upset because it undermines the value of the school. That's not true anymore. The more your football team wins, the more your school's value is. The more your conference teams win, the more the conference's value is, and all the way up to the NCAA. Everybody is incentivized the completely wrong way. And one of the reasons they can't make any of the changes that they actually do want to make, especially paying the players, is Indiana State has as much say as Michigan in everything that happens. And that's not where the money is, and that's not what the sport is. Indiana State is not competing for the same championship as Michigan. Eastern Michigan is not competing for the same championship as Michigan. And pretending like we are is just creating all sorts of problems in a quagmire for the whole NCAA that they can't get out of.
All right. Richard, number one.
Before my number one, I have to say, the next time the internet comes down on you all for being in the pocket of the university, I want you to point to the time that Seth said to give the finger to former Michigan president.
He's dead. That's not like standing up to anybody. He's dead and gone.
I'm just saying. Anyway,
flick off a lot of dead people.
It's good to know. You can put that on the masthead.
Yeah. You're still playing football, Angel.
My number one would be that I think the NCAA needs to focus on trying to get in front of some of the violence in football. I represent a lot of technology companies. I think better living through technology is probably the way this is going to be solved, whether that's in really elaborate robot, laser, two-hand touch, or what have you. I'm being serious. I think that football in 50 years is going to look way different. And I think the NCAA, every step that it can take to get in front of that, especially to look a little less callous than its NFL brother, is going to be good for the NCAA's branding.
I can't believe we got all the way through this and nobody else is going to say, I don't care who gets paid.
No,
I think like, we all referenced it.
Like, honestly, like, the NCAA is making so much money, and some of it should go to the players. Even if it doesn't go to the players, like, how is it at all ethical to be like, all right, we're making a bunch of money, but if a booster wants to give you $500, if the local pizza place wants to have you sponsor their pizza place, you can't make that money on the side. And, like, it's one thing, like, I'm not going to pay you. You're getting a scholarship from us, and that's it, and that's the deal. It's one thing to be like, nobody else can pay you. And people are talking about, like, whenever this comes up, people are like, well, then they'll be controlled by the people who are paying them the money. Mm-hmm. And that is already the case. The FBI investigation should prove that beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Alabama will get all the recruits.
And going back to what you were saying, they absolutely have no ability to police this.
Absolutely none.
I mean, the FBI is able to put this case together because it's the FBI. Can you imagine Mark Emmert, like, walking into his gumshoes, like, office and be like, so what do we got on Louisville, buddy? And he's like, Rick Pitino seems really nice. So
never heard that about him. No. I think that's a tremendously good point that they have that difficulty policing, because I think they have justifiable arguments for there's easy loopholes over here. It's easy to have a booster run a car dealership, etc., which they already obviously do. The logistical concerns for that are the ones that kind of get me, as a lawyer, which is, all right, so does the scholarship become taxable? That's a lot of money. They don't necessarily can't pay the cash out on that. Do other things happen?
We're not
when
changing anything about the scholarship. We're not making them employees.
Well, that's what, but I think that when you open up that can, that gets re-litigated.
I think the can that they're worried about is if you let the players get their picture in NCAA for 2018, then you're also having a strong case that they own their images on TV.
That's the
TV money is what they're worried about.
Well,
and I would say that I think that they're very motivated by issues, in particular with Title IX, but in general in maintaining the whole of the disparate athletic department when there's going to be so much money on the revenue side and not on the other side.
But no one's saying let's stop making money until we get this figured out. They're going to make money hand
no,
over
they
fist.
They would never say that.
And
has that ever been said anywhere?
let's stop and figure this thing out. No, that's
right.
A good point.
We have a wonderful system that I've heard of exchanging services for goods that people have functioned under for years with, you know, only limited amounts of problems. And I
Seth endorsing capitalist economics.
I think capitalism is great. We should give it a shot.
Yeah. All right. Richard Hogue, how do people get in contact with you and your law firm?
How do people get in contact with me? Well, I have a law firm that is in Northville, Michigan, which, even though I have this conversation with a number of my Ann Arbor clients all the time, is just not that far, and I'm happy to meet with you
like,
in Ann Arbor.
I was like, where is that?
Where
like,
is Northville?
15 minutes away.
It's 15 minutes, as long as US 23 isn't backed up for 7 miles. But you can get in contact with me at www.hoaglaw.com.
You don't need the www anymore.
Oh, I like to say it. Doesn't it make it just, a little...
It's fine. You know that. You know
explosives, that. You know, a little language. But that's... Hoag Law is H-O-E-G, because I get a lot of different spellings there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'm happy to get emails at rhoag@hoaglaw.com and respond to phone calls, and you can find all my information there. The one thing I would point out, since I do get a lot of calls and contacts about this, is I'm not a litigator. I can't help you out of jail or otherwise get rid of your speeding ticket for you. But if you have a good idea, or if you're starting a company or otherwise working on starting a company, I'd be more than happy to help as much as I can.
All right. Richard Hogue. Ricky.
Ricky. That's I'm going to put that on my masthead. All right. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. We're going to take one more break, come back, and talk to Ben Mathis Lilly.
The places you'll go may seem far from Ann Arbor, from San Francisco to St. Louis to Shanghai. But as members of the Alumni Association, we're never far. Because Michigan is more than a place. It's a mindset that connects us. For those who leave Michigan, but for whom Michigan never leaves, this is where you belong. The Alumni Association of the University of Michigan. Join today at umalumni.com.
Let me just tell you a couple things to keep in your mind while you're out there. When we take the field, we're going to win. We've got big goals. We've got big ideas. We've got to win this game, and there is no game on the remainder of our schedule more important than the one you're going down to the tunnel to play today. Now let's go.
It's over!
Underground Printing is proud to present the Bow Store. Visit us at our new location at 333 South Main or online at www.bow.team.
If you find yourself on the wrong side of the law in Ann Arbor or around Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man in the huddle. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul at 248-924-9458 or visit his website, michiganlawgrad.com.
We have a lot in common. You rode the bus to Bursley, so did Larry Page, and so did I. And we all love MGO Blah. I'm Nick Hopwood, your MGO financial coach. My entire family went to Michigan State, but I was the smart one finding my way to Ann Arbor to study econ. I've been a financial planner for 17 years, earning the designation Certified Financial Planner, and founded Peak Wealth Management in Plymouth. I know you're pretty smart, and you probably have a sweet retirement spreadsheet already. My job is to make sure. As a financial coach, I make sure you're on track, or if you're not on track, I tell you exactly what you're going to need to do. And if you listen, I'll be able to tell you how your future should look, just like the knowledge. And I have cool charts and graphs to tell the story, sort of like the Mathlete. To learn more or schedule time to chat, check out peakwm.com/mgoblog.
All right, you know, you haven't got it yet, so it's that time again. We must do our live read for hummus. I have had to peel the very reasonable price sticker off of this hummus to tell you that the white bean hummus comes with pine nut and herb topping, or herb topping, depending on the way you pronounce things.
No one says herb.
You're right.
It's like the name of an uncle.
Herb.
Herb.
Uncle Herb. So buy your uncle some herb topping and
with roasted pine nuts.
This is good stuff, too. Check out all their flavors at LantanaFoods.com and find Lantana Hummus at Bush's, Kroger, Meijer, or check your local grocer. How you doing, Ben Mathis Lilly?
Doing great.
Wow, you are doing great. Man, that's peppy. Yeah. So Ben writes for Slate.
That's right.
How's that going?
It's going well.
How are politics now, Ben? How are politics doing?
I'm a news and politics blogger for Slate.com in Brooklyn, and as such, a natural guest for a Michigan football, hockey, basketball broadcast.
So this is actually the segment where we're going to talk about Minnesota.
Yeah.
So what do you know about Minnesota?
Like I told Seth, most of what I know about football is stuff I read on MGO Blog, so
right,
I could just kind of summarize your talking points back to you.
To be fair, that's true for me as well.
Well, our talking points about the Minnesota game is it's just going to be the Rutgers game again, right? Like, that's...
Yeah, sort of.
Okay.
I feel like, but with more spice or more.
Their
herb,
defense
if you will.
Is not as pliable,
isn't it?
No.
You got a weird impression from the Iowa game where you like. I was looking at the stats and I'm like, okay, this is a decent pass defense and a terrible rush defense.
Mm-hmm.
And then I read your thing and it's like, okay, this rush defense is pretty good and the pass defense is just horrendous.
Well. Recently, just because like they've lost all their guys in the last 3 weeks, so like they went from a pretty decent secondary to ripping red shirts off of Boubacar Sissoko like freshman.
Okay,
when I read that, I actually for a second thought you were saying that he actually plays for Minnesota,
which is a slight possibility. Can we not talk about Rich Rod era secondaries like ever again?
Okay,
like I don't like using the word triggered because a lot of people like who are douchers talk about like that now. That triggered me. I was like, oh no, I didn't want to ever think about that ever again. So let's never, ever. But so
I'm deleting the never forget thing right
now. No, don't delete it. Just your shame will live forever on the site. that's the most hypocritical thing I've ever said. But so the Minnesota game, you know, their defense, they got gashed by Michigan State. Like, so LJ Scott goes off for like almost 200 yards, and they're like, if you look at their numbers, Michigan State didn't do that against anyone all year. So I'm like, how is this a good rush defense?
Again, they were replacing players. So okay. Until they could get guys into the right spots.
I'm just yeah. I'm not criticizing you. I'm just like, this is an interesting like disparity between what you saw and the stats.
Yeah, well, I watched the Iowa game because I wanted to get a better sense of like how it shook out. Because of the Michigan State game is when some of those guys were going down and then yeah. They were moving guys out. Their biggest injury is they had a really good it's actually Antoine Winfield's son, Antoine Winfield Jr.
Okay, that also triggers me.
Those are triggering. We won those games.
No, it's not. Cause yeah. It's just, now I'm dead. Now I've died.
Okay. Anyway, Antoine Winfield Jr., who is now a college football player because we're that old, he was actually really good as their like hybrid space player. And losing him, they didn't know how to replace him. They were throwing safeties at it, and they finally settled on this guy Martin, who's he's all right, but he's not good in pass pro.
Is it the same Martin who had a Fox sitcom from a long time ago? As long as we're digging up,
it's his
old
son.
People.
It's yeah. his it's son. His, actually, yeah.
He's an eighth year. Yeah. Anyway, the one change that actually has gone well for them is they moved this horrible safety, Ayinde, to cornerback, and like it's perfect for him. So
okay.
Now he's good where he used to not be. Everything else is it's hard to get a read on these guys because they're so mixed up right now. I like their linebackers, and I love their nose tackle. I was comparing him to Glasgow.
Okay.
I knew about that guy too.
Yeah, I mean. He's good, but I don't. It'll be interesting to see if they can hold up because Michigan's coming off that grinding of records, and if they can do that again, then that's five games in a row they've improved or at least held serve, and then you can maybe go into Wisconsin being like, okay, we might be able to do this.
The matchup I was excited to see, and I again come back to whether Owenu is healthy or if we're playing Runyon in that spot, but they have this this DT who's. He listed at 330 pounds and 6'2". I think he's at least 360, maybe 380.
360?
And he wears his shirt out, so he looks just like a big slob out there.
Okay.
And he plays like it, too. So sometimes he's just...
This guy is going to find you.
Run away from him. I'm not the fastest guy, but I saw tape of him, and they were actually leaving him unblocked and blocking the defensive end. On outside zones the other way because they're like, this guy's not going to catch up to the run. And they were correct.
But if he does.
Yeah. If he catches you.
I can outrun this guy. And there's no other player in college football that I think I can outrun. But I'm pretty confident that I can make it past this guy.
I wouldn't agree with that. Hey, you're out in Brooklyn, right? You get the diaspora.
That's right.
Do you go to the game watches or you just watch at home?
I have a 15-month-old son, so my social life is not especially robust right now.
How does a 15-month-year-old son feel about the quarterback competition?
He likes to hit the TV screen and try to pull it down on top of himself when no matter which quarterback is playing.
So,
which is it's commentary of sorts.
So he's probably like, come on, he's a McCaffrey guy then.
right. I mean, he's playing for the future, you know.
Yeah,
it's a long
journey.
You know, I would say the diaspora is especially excited. I mean, this is all based on the index of when I wear the hat, how many people shout at me, which is, like, I think a perfectly valid way to like, measure the level of fan excitement. And it has been a lot stronger in recent years. I think, you know, it's, like, definitely a more modest sentiment right now.
Does your son have a fake internet name or not? You just don't talk about it.
I actually didn't know until you wrote it the other day that your son was not named Denard Robbins. I mean, it's just like
I had to clarify
almost
that
plausible.
Immediately after he was born,
right?
Because people started forwarding my tweet that he was named Denard Robinson Cook to Denard Robinson. So I was like, I have to clarify this. Please don't tweet a lie at Denard Robinson, because if he's disappointed in me, I will probably cease to exist entirely.
I thought you were going to say they forwarded it to your wife, who would have been even more disappointed, I think, to learn.
No, I mean, the concept is like, okay, I'm on the internet. I talk about the sun.
Sure.
I know what Google is. So if anything shows up on Google under his real name, it had better be his fault and not mine.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I did a piece last week at my real job of very professional political blogging where I tracked Donald Trump's first tweet against when my son woke up and started yelling at me. And I did not use his name for this exact reason, right, to like let him build his own kind of career of shame and not,
yes,
not have to be like piggybacked on him.
Like you know, someone Googles his name and up comes like a terrible game prediction from 20 years ago,
right,
where,
right,
like, oh my God, his father thought that Michigan was going to beat Penn State. What an idiot.
Right.
So I wanted to protect him from that and literally nothing else he will face in his life.
That was some good Minnesota takes right there.
Well, I mean, like, Their offense is just going to die because their quarterback can't throw the ball.
Their offense is going to – oh, God, he's so – I was trying to go back through the old FIFA films and also some of our worst UFRs and try to find somebody who had a worse downfield success rating.
Than Demery Croft.
What about Rutgers 2016?
Rutgers 2016 against Ohio State was 60%, which is much higher than this guy was.
Oh, I meant against Michigan, yeah.
Oh,
you're taking opponent.
Quarterbacks that we've scouted before.
I was
trying to find somebody, and I couldn't. There's nobody who has been that bad. There were a couple backups who we charted because there was a possibility that they play. And
The thing that gets me about Croft is he's like completed a third of his passes his last two games, and okay, he's a running quarterback. That's fine.
He's not much of a runner, though.
Yeah, he got some yards against Michigan State because they were up like three scores. And then the last two games, he's averaged under 3 yards a rush. So, like, what are you doing? Like, why? You got Connor Rota, who kind of sucks, but doesn't really suck. So, what are you doing? That's my thing.
Yeah, I don't know. If they think this guy is the better runner out of him and Connor Rota, then I think I wrote in my thing, if you have two Demery Crofts and one of them's a better runner, might as well play the better runner.
We have also learned that sometimes coaches don't play the best person every time without failing.
I mean, that's true. I mean, it's a little bit weird that they pulled their guy for a guy who seems way worse.
Right.
It's usually kind of the opposite of the way it works.
I think that's it's an effect of the teams they play. They played Michigan State and Iowa. And Michigan State's pass defense is not back to what they were, but it's not a bad pass defense right now. And Iowa's pass defense is actually really good right now.
And their run defense is horrendous.
So, yeah.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
So,
They've got a great cornerback. Yeah.
That's not really relevant.
Anyway.
So, this is...
It is relevant because Minnesota has one star. They have Johnson.
Johnson.
Everyone's a Johnson or a Smith or a Williams on this team. Yeah. Anyway.
They're all, you know, they're descended from pork farmers.
There's a Schluter. There's one good name.
A Schluter?
Yeah, Sam Schluter.
I mean, there's no way that family's not in the pork business.
This is a family radio show. We can't say Schluter over and over again.
Right tackle Schluter. He's actually one of the trouble spots that I highlighted. He's like Ulysio who can't run block.
It's an embarrassment to the rest of the Schluters.
Yeah, you gotta stop doing that. This is driving me crazy. We're gonna get the FCC on us. This is an internet show, so it won't
happen.
You
say it's a podcast, right? It's not governed by non-podcast laws.
So, like, if you could go on like MSNBC and be like, "This is a podcast,"
that's
and start swearing.
Yes,
I'm going to do that.
Schluter is not a swear word.
I'm going to totally do that if I'm ever on MSNBC. I hope no one from MSNBC is listening to this right now.
I think it's a safe bet.
Well, screw you, Ben Mathis Lily.
Can you swear on Slate?
We have a wide and diverse listenership. So this is going to be like, you know, 25-3 or 25-7 or 25-10 or 28 to
yeah.
But nobody scores 28 anymore. What's going on? So I mean, this is just going to be the same game, right?
Yeah, sort of.
And everybody, it's going to be nothing but running. So there's going to be like a fourth quarter, and the fourth quarter is going to have 8 commercial breaks, despite it being a 3-score game.
While we're standing out in the rain and the cold. But yeah, Tyler Johnson is the receiver. He's good. I'm trying to inject some sort of football analysis into this because I did spend the last 2 days buried in Rutgers, Minnesota,
well,
Iowa.
Well, then get it out there because we obviously don't have much time for
you
it.
You made me watch Minnesota, Iowa. You know
I didn't tell you to do anything.
Do you know how boring that game was?
I was like, you were like, do you need me to do the FFFF? And I was like, Yeah, I guess.
And Central Michigan was playing a really interesting game at the time, and I kept walking, and they wear similar uniforms. I kept looking back, like, why are these teams in the Big Ten and these teams are not?
Yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. But Tyler Johnson.
Okay. We got some analysis.
It's going to be fun to watch him against our cornerbacks.
How's your job these days? Don't tell me. I don't want to know.
Thanks for having me on the podcast.
Yeah,
having on his show. This is.
do you want to talk about something?
In particular?
Yeah.
Look, I'm okay. This is how this happened.
Okay.
I think I emailed you and Seth and Ace and said I will be in the city of Ann Arbor.
Right.
And Seth said, "Come on the podcast." And I specifically. I was very confused as to why you would want me to.
Well,
do that.
I think you're a lovely person.
Sure, I mean, I think I have a certain
je ne sais quoi.
Right, I think this is, and he can confirm this week. I said, I'm still going to be here. If you have found literally anyone else in the world,
we found like several people
more about football.
We've had like three guests.
Please, by all means, put them on instead of me. He
instead you're
insisted.
Here.
So
he bullied you into this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well,
I don't even like football.
You can't have Ben Mathis-Lilly in town and not get him on the podcast.
That's right.
You've been in town before, and he hasn't been on the podcast. Well, clearly that's not true.
He's got a 15-month-old. Right. He's not allowed out of his house.
This is fine. All future podcast guests should have some sort of topic or direction in their lives.
I offer. wait. Okay.
Come with a jug or don't come at all.
I also proposed the let's all talk about how bad things happen after 7 p.m. to Michigan football.
Yeah.
Like kind of like a low light reel.
And that triggered me.
Sort of like a Gremlins kind of
yeah,
deal?
I came prepared.
Oh, you got it. Okay.
We'll talk about
and
triggered.
You shot that down. Yeah, that is kind of like.
That is incredible.
Also like, the Under the Lights game, that was good.
There was one good thing, and then everything else has been
horrible. I
was in
Brooklyn for that game.
Brooklyn? All right. this is like rivaling a John U. Bacon segment in like Trainwreck, which is good. It's good.
Yeah.
I don't want to make you feel insulted. I want you to be comfortable in who you are as a person.
I think that the listeners feel insulted.
Yeah, okay. That's a good way to okay. wrap it up, I think. We're insulting your listeners. Your listeners. Our listeners. But the music's playing, so mercifully, our time here is about to be over.
And we gave our listeners beer today, so they're happy.
I'm sorry I said you had no direction in your life. You have a son. Obviously, that's not true.
I've got several things going on.
Okay, he's got lots of things. He's got a lot of irons in the fire. You're going to hear the name Ben Mathis-Lilly again.
When you have a book, come on here with a book.
Okay.
As long as it's, good.
Not some random event that happened 100 years ago in Canada.
All right, we got to stop talking right now.
We'd love to thank our lovely sponsors, Underground Printing, The Bow Store, Residence Inn Ann Arbor Downtown, Homeshare Lending, Peak Wealth Management, the Alumni Association of the University of Michigan, Ann Arbor Elder Law, Lantana Hummus, Human Element, Ecotelligent Homes, Michigan Law Grad.
Who's got it better than us?